Ray McDonald with BB Rexa and Lil Wayne. And I want to say hello to my latest Twitter followers, Jessica A. Caesar and Kip Brockett. Thank you both for joining the party at Ray on the Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Dorothy Gundy, and Anne Ball. Later, Kelly Jean Kelly will have the next part in our series on America's presidents. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Researchers have built a cell phone that does not need batteries. They say the phone can send and receive calls using power from radio signals or light. A team from the University of Washington in Seattle is currently testing a prototype of the phone.
Hi there.
Hi, I'm calling from a battery-free cell phone.
The researchers were able to develop a device that uses much less power than any cell phones used today. This design allows the new phone to run on very small amounts of electricity. Team member Vamsi Tala says the phone picks up small electrical signals known as radio frequency or RF waves.
Ambient RF waves are all around us. So as an example, your FM stations broadcast radio waves, your AM stations do that, your TV stations, your cell phone towers, they all are transmitting RF waves.
The phone can also convert ambient light into electrical current for power, according to the researchers. Shyam Golakota is a professor in the Paul G. Allen School of Computer Science and Engineering. He says the invention demonstrates great progress in new cell phone technology.
This battery-free phone is a major leap in terms of the capabilities of battery-free devices, because now we have a streaming device that can continuously talk as well as receive data, which is basically a phone.
The phone identifies speech going into the microphone and coming out of the speaker. These speech vibrations are then converted into radio signals by a device called a base station. The prototype has been able to operate on power gathered from radio signals from a base station up to 9 meters away, according to the researchers. Using power from ambient light, it has communicated with a base station up to 15 meters away. The team says the base station operating model could eventually be widely used by putting the technology in existing cell phone towers and Wi-Fi systems. The researchers demonstrated the phone in a test with the calling service Skype. During the test, the device received an incoming call, made an outgoing call, and was able to put callers on hold. The prototype has limited capabilities because it is not a finished product. For example, users now have to use headphones to hear calls and must also press a button to change between talking and listening. And currently, it can only be used for making calls. However, the team plans to develop new prototypes that could handle texting, photos, and internet use. They are also working on a version that could use a small solar cell to provide power. Vamsi Tala says he thinks the technology might be able to greatly change the capabilities of all phones. This includes solving one of the biggest problems for all users, dead batteries.
In the future, every smartphone would come with a battery-free mode where you can at least make a voice call when your battery is dead.
The researchers are hoping to complete a finished product within about 9 months. I'm Brian Lynn.
Detroit, Michigan has earned the name America's Comeback City for a reason. Detroit knows both economic hardship and recovery. The city was especially hard hit during the Great Recession, which started in 2007 and continued to 2009. At one point, Detroit had an unemployment rate of 28.4%. Many businesses closed, and some Detroit natives left the city. But by June 2017, the jobless rate was 7.8%. Detroit's economy is improving in part because it has welcomed so many immigrants. They are opening new businesses, which have created jobs and made their neighborhoods safer. Yet, some observers believe that, while the lives of immigrants are improving, the city is not. Ehsan Takbim founded the Bangladeshi American Public Affairs Committee. He is one of many immigrants who are trying to strengthen Detroit's economy. Takbim talked to a VOA reporter about his neighborhood.
This is the main the street of Banglatown. All the commercial districts are right here. This is where the revitalization is taking place.
Banglatown was once a very poor neighborhood in Detroit. But Takbim and others are working to make the area a place that people want to visit.
You will hardly find any vacant spot right now. The value of the homes had gone up since then. Businesses have been thriving and traffic has gone up tremendously.
Groups like Global Detroit and the New American Economy have found that the arrival of immigrants has slowed the drop in the city's population. They say immigrants are also responsible for rising housing prices, and they have created or have helped keep in place more than 1,700 local manufacturing jobs. A study by the two groups found that the number of immigrants in Detroit grew by 12.1% between 2010 and 2014. or 4,137 individuals. At the same time, the city's population dropped about 4.2%. But some observers do not believe that immigrants are the reason the city is recovering. And they say Detroit still faces many tests. Stanley Renshaw teaches political science at the City University of New York. He told VOA that immigrants alone will not save Detroit. He says any economic activity is grabbed by economists as positive.
You increase the overall financial numbers of the country, but the people who benefit most from that are the immigrants themselves. And that's fine. You know, we want them to prosper. But please don't tell me that what you're doing is saving the country or the city or the town.
Renshaw says Detroit has a long history of political corruption and one of the highest murder rates in the country. He says those problems cannot be solved by new immigrants. The administration of President Donald Trump says immigrants with few skills take away economic opportunities for native-born Americans. Yet Global Detroit director Steve Tobachman disagrees. Immigrants are leading in the city's recovery, he says. Tobachman adds that new residents are moving in and helping to stabilize working-class communities by fixing up homes, opening up businesses, and creating more consumers.
We see a hardworking yet very low income community. And what I expect to see is through more people moving into the city, particularly because immigrants are driving that, neighborhood stabilizing, and those communities that stabilize will begin to retain and attract new businesses, create more jobs, and that is the pathway forward.
Tobachman says depopulation remains the biggest problem facing Detroit. He says immigrants are our best hope to rebuilding, especially on the neighborhood level. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
Last year, planet Earth was hotter than ever before. That is according to a report by the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. It says that 2016 marked the third year in a row of record warmth. NOAA scientists have kept records for the last 136 years. The report says long-term global warming and an unusually strong El Niño weather pattern combined to make it a record hot year. El Niños are weather patterns that warm the Pacific Ocean. That puts a lot of heat into the atmosphere and raises temperatures. They helped raise extreme temperatures, dry conditions, and heavy rains. It also says high temperatures helped set fires in Alberta, Canada. Deadly heat and drought or extremely dry conditions hit India, which resulted in a water crisis. More than 450 scientists from nearly 60 countries contributed to the report, released on August 10th. Deke Arndt is a co-author of the report. He spoke to VOA by Skype.
It confirms what we know. We know we live in a warming world. We know that that world is going to continue to warm. We know that this is going to cause issues around the world.
Named the State of the Climate, NOAA says the report takes into account tens of thousands of measurements. They include global climate indicators, weather events, greenhouse gas emissions, sea levels, the saltiness of the oceans, snow cover, and sea ice. Greenhouse gases were the highest on record. Other climate numbers that were at their highest record include global surface temperatures as well as sea surface temperatures. And the global sea level average also rose to a new record high in 2016. It was about 82 millimeters higher than observed in 1993. Tropical cyclones were also up. There were 93 named cyclones in 2016. One number went down, the amount of Arctic sea ice. It was not good news. The most Arctic sea ice coverage in March 2016 was the smallest in 37 years. NOAA's Arndt says there is little question about why the planet is warming.
We can always refine the numbers on exactly what percent is coming, but the vast majority is coming from human activity, and that's very abundantly clear.
But this report is not in agreement with the Trump administration policy. Environmental Protection Agency Chief Scott Pruitt says it is still debatable whether humans are responsible for global warming.
I believe the ability to measure with precision the degree of human activity's impact on the climate is subject to more debate.
Pruitt's statements and the U.S. withdrawal from the Paris Climate Agreement goes against what many climate scientists in the U.S. believe. The NOAA report came out days after the New York Times published a draft of a U.S. government report on climate. It said that the average temperature in the country has risen quickly and drastically since 1980. It also says that recent decades have been the warmest in the past 1,500 years. This report was written by scientists from 13 federal agencies. It says that Americans are already feeling the result of climate change. It also says human activities are mainly responsible for climate change and that there are no other explanations. The report is part of the National Climate Assessment and is published every 4 years. The National Academy of Sciences has approved the study. The authors are waiting for the Trump administration to approve its release. I'm Ann Ball.
VOA Learning English presents America's Presidents. Today we are talking about Theodore Roosevelt, the 26th President of the United States. Many Americans like to call him Teddy Roosevelt or even TR. These nicknames for the president show that Roosevelt was, in general, popular with the public. He is one of the four presidents whose face can be seen on Mount Rushmore, a memorial to famous U.S. leaders. Historians note that Roosevelt's term in office marks the beginning of the modern presidency. In other words, he expanded the position and used the media to connect with the public. Among Americans, his public image is often linked to youth, energy, strength, courage, and playfulness. But his image has also been linked to a strong liking for military action and for oneself. Theodore Roosevelt is also often tied to the American West, but he was born and raised on the East Coast in New York City. His father was a wealthy businessman. His mother was from a Southern planter family that owned slaves. Theodore Roosevelt had two sisters and a brother. His family called him by another nickname, Teddy. When he was a boy, young Theodore was often sick. He had asthma, a lung condition that could make physical activity difficult. So, as he got older, Roosevelt strengthened his body. For the rest of his life, he strongly believed in physical exercise and vigorous activity, what he called the strenuous life. Young Roosevelt also had hunger for learning. He studied with private tutors, traveled overseas, and studied many subjects while in college at Harvard. After his college years, he studied law briefly, and then began serving in public office in New York. But tragedy halted his early government service. Roosevelt had married Alice Hathaway Lee, who soon became pregnant. But 2 days after the baby was born, Roosevelt's wife died of kidney disease. And as it happened, Roosevelt's mother died on the same day, in the same house. She suffered from Bright's disease, another disorder affecting the kidneys. The future president was struck by grief. He left his baby daughter with his sister and went to the American West. There, Roosevelt lived as a cowboy, hunting, riding horses, taking part in cattle drives, and even chasing people who broke the law. The experience helped define Roosevelt's life and beliefs. But after 2 years, he was ready to return to the East Coast. There, he married Edith Kermit Caro, a woman he had known since childhood. They settled in a house on Long Island, New York, and raised Roosevelt's daughter, Alice. He and Edith also had 5 other children. His family supported Roosevelt's rise in Republican Party politics, including his campaign to become governor of New York. But some of the party officials were not happy with Roosevelt. They did not like his independence, and they did not want him to be reelected as governor. So they plotted to have him nominated as U.S. vice president in the election of 1900. They believed Roosevelt would not be able to give them much trouble in that position. As the Republican leaders hoped, Roosevelt and the sitting president, William McKinley, won both the popular and electoral vote in a landslide. But less than a year later, McKinley was dead. And with that, Republican leaders found that the man they wanted to get out of their way was now the country's 26th president. When he became president, Roosevelt was only 42 years old. He is still the youngest person to hold that office. At first, Roosevelt promised to continue the policies of McKinley, who was, after all, the president voters had reelected. But Roosevelt quickly put his own mark on the presidency. He is known for trying to balance the needs of many groups in society, including business owners, farmers, and workers. Roosevelt called his program the Square Deal. In other words, he suggested that everyone was treated fairly. However, some Americans objected to Roosevelt reducing the power of big businesses. They said his use of government rules, in general, did not let market forces operate freely. Roosevelt is also known for protecting the nation's wilderness areas. He set aside more than 800,000 square kilometers of land to protect nature and wildlife. In his foreign policy, Roosevelt was energetic. He helped Panama win independence from Colombia in order to start building the Panama Canal. He also defended, and even added to, the Monroe Doctrine, an idea from the presidency of James Monroe. Roosevelt confirmed that the United States would bar European powers from intervening in South America, and, more than that, that the U.S. would police the Western Hemisphere and make sure that countries honored their international obligations. In other words, Roosevelt believed the United States had the right and responsibility to be a world power. If diplomatic negotiations did not work, he was not afraid to threaten the use of force. He famously said, "Speak softly and carry a big stick. You will go far." Voters approved of Roosevelt's actions, or at least they enjoyed his leadership and his young family that played all over the White House. In 1904, Roosevelt easily won the presidency in his own right. He is the first vice president who took power after the death of a sitting president to earn his own term. Although he was permitted to seek another term as president, Roosevelt promised not to. He left the White House in 1909, still a very young man. For a while, he traveled overseas, but when he returned home, he did not like the direction the new president and the Republican Party was going. So Roosevelt created a new political group called the Progressive Party, or as some called it, the Bull Moose Party. Not surprisingly, the term Bull Moose was meant to suggest Roosevelt and his animal-like strength. Although he earned many votes, Roosevelt did not win the 1912 election. Instead, he split the votes of the Republican Party and permitted a Democrat to win the presidency. Roosevelt's efforts were not entirely lost, however. Later presidents, including Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, John Kennedy, and Lyndon Johnson, used many of his ideas for reform. And major U.S. political parties today often find lessons from Roosevelt's presidency they admire or support. Both Democrat Bill Clinton and Republican George W. Bush said Theodore Roosevelt was one of their role models. In the years after the 1912 election, Roosevelt remained active. He traveled, campaigned, and continued to try to influence politics from his home in New York, where he died unexpectedly in his sleep at age 60. One public official observed, "Death had to take Roosevelt sleeping, for if he had been awake, there would have been a fight."